I've lived in New Jersey my entire life, and I've been involved in lots of arts, acting, writing. I even married a musician. But a lot of people don't think New Jersey is known for arts and culture. Well, they're wrong. And my goal is to introduce everyone to the most talented people I know. They're singers, they're writers, they're musicians, they're actors, they're chefs, they're martial artists, they're everything you can imagine, and they're going to be on my show. Every one of them. Well, maybe not every one of them, but a lot of them. So they're in New Jersey, and maybe they're not so famous, but maybe they should be. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey. Yes, I have been away for a while. Life got in the way of my podcast, but I'm back, and I'm back with a really interesting guest today. She is a singer, a songwriter, a multi-instrumentalist, and she has a great laugh. Her name is Desiree Spinks, but you might know her as Dez from Dez and the Swagmatics. We talk about how influential Musical Master Camp was for her and how it changed her life. We talked about how hard it is to be a woman in the music industry. And we talk about how different musicians' brains are. And believe me, I know. But who is Dez? Well, that's exactly what I asked her. Dez, who are you? No, really, tell me who you are.
That is a complex question. I guess I'm a musician. I guess that's the purest way to describe that. I teach on top of that. I play a bunch of instruments. I'm mainly known for singing, but I do play other things and do other things. And I'm in a kid's show on YouTube.
What kid's show?
So my friends have a show called Surf Guard. When they went to print the original edit, they lost all of the audio. So they had to go back and overdub it. And now that's become the style of the show. So it's kind of like an old Kung Fu movie where the people are talking and the words aren't exactly lining up, but it's about a lifeguard on the beach in California, and he comes to the East Coast, and he's kind of trying to stop people from disrespecting each other during the surfing season. And I play Urban Farmer D's. I wear my overalls, and I have a musical number, and I run around on the farm, and it's really fun. Well,
you mentioned that you do other things than just sing and front a band, the Swagmatics.
Yes.
You're also a vocal coach and a piano teacher, right?
Yes, I am. I work at Lake House Music Academy. I started...
Who doesn't work there?
I know, at this point. Every musician in Asbury pretty much works there. And when I'm not teaching, I'm gigging.
So tell me about the Swagmatics.
The project started 2012. Mm-hmm. I had just come out of singing, like, my umpteenth backup gig, and in working backup, I was starting to realize how easy it was to be the front person, and I was like, I can totally do this.
I can do that.
Yeah. I write music. Why aren't I doing this? So I started with my buddy Mike Smith, and I was going through a nasty breakup, so I was over at my girlfriend's house, and she was dating him, and I'd cry on the couch, and he'd help coach me through writing songs, and we wrote my first 4 or 5 tunes, and started playing them out as a duo called Mood Swing. We played, played, and then he dropped because he was in 5 bands. So he had no time to be in a band. So then, now I'm sitting here with these original songs and no one to play them, and I decided that I wanted to have a band. So I called up everyone that I knew that I had worked with in prior times. I called up Brett Smith. I called up Jimmy Farkas, who I knew from De Soul. I called up Billy Vegas. And I called up another guitar player named Squiggs. We had a saxophone player, actually, when we started, too, called Nathan Cohen. And that was the first iteration of the Swagmatics. We played one show as that band at the Stone Pony in our first show. Since then, there's been a lot of personnel changes. The band is almost broken up once. And then I got a call from Christine Fiola, who said, do you want to do a Prince tribute show? And I'm like, yeah, I want to do it, but I don't have a band. I don't even have a drummer right now. So Jimmy called up his friend Craig Lawler, who's still in the band today. And I called up my friend from doing theater, because in a multitude of other lives, I used to do musical theater, knew that he played keys, and I said, hey, do you want to come play keys in this Prince show with me? And it'll only be one show, guys. It'll only be one show, and Craig and Ray are still with me today. So,
so I see that for, I think, at least a couple of years, you've been going to the Musical Master Camp in the Catskills.
Yes.
And
I just got back.
You said it changed your life. Tell me about that. How did it help you with your craft?
It's very intensive in the sense that it is singing all day and all night. But there is the beauty of roots rock is that there's no barrier between the artists and the campers. So the people that pay to go there and the people that are paid to go there.
So people pay to go there.
Yes.
And they pay, and what are they getting from it? Lessons in music?
First and foremost, it's the most beautiful location. It's on the side of a mountain in this resort called the Full Moon Resort in the Catskill Mountains. I think it's mainly run by Oteil Burbage, who plays with Grateful Dead now, or Dead and Company, sorry. And Melody Trucks, who's the daughter of Butch Trucks of the Allman Brothers. And they have performances every night, and then they have these big open seminars.
So did you go as a student or as a...
Well, the first couple of years I went as a student, and it was my friend Ryan Gregg, who's the lead singer of the Shady Street Show Band, and my now bass player, Kevin Stryker, and they would not shut up about this place. You have to go. You're going to love it. You're going to eat it up. You're going to fit right in. You have to go. You have to go. You have to go. And it's a week long, and I was like, I can't take a week off from work. It's too much. I don't want to. So the compromise was that I would come up a night and camp in the yurt and you know, check it out. And I've never left. It was just having the opportunity to meet musicians from around the globe and jam with them and just share ideas and do it for the entire week. Now I've been going, I won't miss a day.
So you go now as a performer.
Now I go as a performer. My first day there, I got to perform Stormy Monday with Brandon Taz Niederauer. He's like this young guitar prodigy. And Valor Trucks, who's also Butch Trucks' son, plays incredible guitar. I believe also I played with Nikki Glaspie on drums, who drums for the Nth Power, but also used to drum for Beyonce. And I got to just come in on the first day, hours after I landed, and sing this song on stage with these unbelievable artists. And it's life-changing. I've gotten gigs out of it. I had the opportunity to sing with Sister Sparrow and the Dirty Birds at Irving Plaza because of this. I got the opportunity to sing with Luther Dickinson and the North Mississippi All-Stars. And we did a Sirius Satellite radio show, and we did a Pace magazine shoot.
Tell me, what has been the most discouraging thing about being an artist?
There's so much. Not that there's like, it's incredibly discouraging, but you know, there are setbacks, and especially having done this for as many years as I have. Being a woman in this business is hard. I'll just say it. It's really challenging. And more so when people don't really believe that you are more than just the singer, quote unquote. And even that I hate, because being the singer is hard. There was the first couple of years, some promoters, who I won't name, wouldn't even book the shows, my band's shows, through me, because they didn't believe that I was in charge of my own band.
You know, this is what really disturbs me. People are like, oh, you know, this Me Too movement, this whole thing, it's ridiculous. Like, women have it easier now than men do. And like,
that's
are
not,
you joking?
Yeah, that's never been true.
and they're like, oh, it's not fair. I have to be careful about everything I say.
Oh, God forbid.
Poor baby.
You
poor
thing.
We've had to put up with this bullshit for like forever.
Yeah. You have to like really temper how you speak, because people will think you're a bitch, or people will think you're hysterical and emotional if you like have any emotion in anything that you say.
And quite honestly, you know that saying, hell hath no fury as a woman scorned? Who usually ends up killing their partner?
For real.
The guys.
It's always
they're
the
ones that can't, you know, it's always projection.
Yeah.
Know? They project on us
what they think,
what's
that
wrong
they
with
would
them.
Do.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're afraid that we would treat them like they treat us. But like that in itself is a challenge. And then people are like, you know, can somebody else give me the chords to this song? I'm like, I wrote this song. Like, what do you mean? I'm telling you, like, I can tell you what it is. I'm not an idiot. Less so now. It feels so cocky, but I feel like at least at this point, now that I've been doing this for a long time, that most people kind of have an idea of who I am. And most people that come in and see the show don't make those immediate judgments because of all of the years of time behind me. You know?
But every woman that comes up behind you Still has to deal with it.
Yeah. Still has to go through it.
Guys are immediately assumed to be accomplished.
Exactly.
That's the immediate assumption.
At least
and
competent.
And we have to prove it. Yeah.
Yeah. They're at least assumed to be competent. And we are assumed immediately to be incompetent. Every time somebody, you know, asks somebody else for the keys or for the chords in my song, and I go over to the keys or to the guitar or to the bass and I play it for them, and they get those bug eyes.
Yeah. Oh.
I love that. That's my favorite thing.
So Des, every artist has their own style, but usually at some point there's an artist that not so much they want to emulate, but fashion themselves after in a way. Who's that artist for you?
The quickest answer that comes to my mind, even though it's not the only answer, but is probably Prince, because I have him tattooed in my body. So, yeah.
By the way, I saw Prince back in, it was like the early 2000s.
Yeah, me too. I think I saw him on his last stadium tour.
What? I worked in radio for a long time.
Oh, my God.
And we would get promotional tickets. And I was in my job 2 weeks, and the promotions manager said, "Didn't you say your husband really likes Prince? You want these two tickets?" I'm like, yes.
That's unbelievable. My mom, since I was like young, like 11, 12, so always said that if Prince ever came around in a place where we could see him, that she would buy me tickets. So it was during his last stadium tour, and he was coming right to MSG, and we could take a train right to the place. And I'm like, Mom, it's time.
Yeah.
It was otherworldly. I will never forget it.
So I'm guessing that was like the most iconic concert that you ever went to.
Oh my gosh, that's up there. I think I want to put that at number one, but like right underneath it, almost tied, is my other musical influence, and that's Sharon Jones of Sharon Jones and the Deaf
Kings. Yes,
I adore her, and I saw her play at the Count Basie Theater. I got in for free, and it was one of the greatest shows I've ever seen in my life. I did not sit down the entire time.
That's a great segue, because I was looking at some of the other artists that you admire, and I see that we have some pretty similar tastes. Amy Winehouse,
yes.
Prince, of course, Earth, Wind, and Fire,
yes.
Carole King.
Yes, Carol's my favorite.
Of course. Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
And Carlos Santana.
Yes.
And by the way, Carlos also makes some great shoes. And I noticed
really?
That you really like shoes. I've been checking you out online, and I see that we both love shoes. And my most iconic concert was Janis Joplin.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That was just what I was going to say. That was literally the next artist that I was coming to on my list. There are certain artists that, like, I will forever be in regret that I never got to see them. And Janis is absolutely one of them.
And, you know, before, my girlfriend gave me tickets for my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wasn't a Janis Joplin fan until I went to the concert.
it was
that
tracks.
Great. I think it was 1968.
Oh,
I mean, it was
God.
Just like unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh. I'm obsessed with Janis Joplin. That was a large part of when I was learning how to use my voice. I mean, I had been in choir and everything, but I just started to kind of explore what my solo voice sounded like. And Janis, I noticed, was a lot more what I wanted to sound like. I wanted to sound like Janis so bad, and I'm 17 and my voice is so tiny and so clean, and I was like, I just want to sound like this. But yeah, then in high school, I would say getting into Janis, getting into Carole King. Oh, and then I had a goth phase in high school, so I got super into Tool and Nine Inch Nails and Bauhaus and The Cure.
What current artists should I be checking out?
The one artist right now that I'm obsessed with is Alan Stone.
Oh.
He is so, so, so good. He's kind of like blue-eyed soul, R&B. He plays guitar. He's got like this crazy long curly blonde hair. It was the last concert I saw before COVID. It was my Valentine's Day present in February.
I'm going to talk to you about how a person's taste in music evolves. Gary and I just had a little disagreement about this. Now, I say that when you're young, and you really haven't discovered your taste. If someone that you admire or you're close to, or you know, like your best friend or your favorite cousin, if they introduce you to some type of music, you end up liking it because they like it.
Yes.
and I think that really is reflected throughout your life.
Absolutely. You know,
good. I can tell Gary that I'm right and he's wrong.
Well, there's two things. Well, no, actually, most of the music that I love has been either recommended to me by friends or family. I mean, my parents both love music, and it was always playing somewhere in the house. My mom was good for putting on music and cleaning, so it was a lot of Luther Vandross and Freddie Jackson, and Anita Baker is my mom's favorite. And then my dad, it's such a weird mix. My dad would listen to like jazz and Najee and like Natalie Cole, and then also gangster rap, like Tupac and Biggie, because my parents had me relatively young. So that was, you know, their music at that time.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of my formative music. But then I got into middle school. I think one of the first CDs that I bought was like with my own money. It was two of them. It was TLC, Crazy Sexy Cool, and it was Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill.
Ooh.
She's unbelievable still. She has not faltered one moment.
Now, I want to get a little serious here. I hear so many people saying, well, you know, all of a sudden police are doing these terrible things. And it's like,
all of a sudden, we know
where
have you been?
Yeah, really. How do you handle it when people say stuff like that to you, or do they not?
I feel like people know better than to say it directly to me, but I've seen people say it around me. I've actually kind of taken a step back from social media since Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd, because I was getting into fights with people on social media about things, and it was just really stealing my peace.
Yeah.
I always try to come from a place of compassion, because you don't know what you don't know, you know? And most people are saying these things because they don't know.
Exactly.
And it's up to maybe myself to educate them if they don't know. Now, that's if they're willing to hear and willing to learn. That's really a lot of the problems that I rub up against, because there's this cognitive dissonance of you have what you've always believed your whole life to be true being challenged, and that's really hard for some people. Yeah. I always say that, like, you know, the moment you stop letting your mind grow and letting your mind change is the moment that, you know, you might as well pack it in.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting how Lindsey Graham was saying that we should leave deciding what marriages are legal up to the states, because they were talking about gay marriage.
Yeah.
And so the reporter said, well, what about the case that decided interracial marriage? Oh, that's the, you know, Democrats just
Loving
bring that
versus.
Up because they don't want to talk about inflation.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, just let's change the subject. Yeah.
That's because Clarence Thomas is married to a white woman.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
the main reason. Why.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And because he knows that more people are accepting of gay marriage now. And it's wonderful that homosexuality is not nearly as stigmatized
taboo
as it used
yeah.
to be.
Legally stigmatized, you know.
Yeah. As the younger generation grows up, they're used to having the races mixed.
Yeah, there's always been a sense of maybe less so now. Now that I'm as old as I am, I feel like maybe a little less so now, but there's always been a feeling of otherness. And, like, you know, my dad grew up in Asbury during the race riots, experienced them. His brother and his brothers were involved. They were, you know, outside of their house, and I think Asbury and Neptune, and they said a car full of white kids drove by them and threw glass bottles at them. And, you know, they went into town and it was on fire, and, like, all these things were burning down. There were people running and screaming in the streets. And, like, you know, these are stories that I heard when I was younger. So it's funny, when my dad heard that I was playing music in Asbury Park, he's like, what?
Watch out. Yeah.
Why? I used to get really bent out of shape when people would come up to me after, like, I'd play these beautiful piano lounges when I was coming up. And they'd come up to me after the show and be like, wow, you speak so well. I used to get so bent out of shape, but I'm also like, they probably have never met a black person in their entire lives. Mm-hmm. And I'm the first one, and it's not how it's portrayed on television. Like, you know?
I know.
And there's a definite perception as far as media and everything is concerned, and probably helping fuel and how Fox News perceives black people. I used to be painfully shy. Again, it comes from that feeling of otherness. We moved from Neptune to Lakewood to Jackson. And I grew up and graduated high school from Jackson. So I was one of, like, 8 black kids in the entire area. And so because of that, and again, we were talking about media perception and everything, people were afraid of me. So, which is funny. I'm not a person
You're very fear-inducing.
Yeah, I know. Yes. I'm so scary. Most people were afraid of me, except for my couple of few little weirdo anime club, choir, and theater friends. That really was my saving grace.
Like Glee.
Yeah, exactly. And they accepted me, and they were just as weird as I was, and we'd sit and talk about animes and read mangas and, like, you know, and sing show tunes.
So what about people that know you now? How would they describe you?
Ooh-wee. I've heard someone describe me as fierce, and I don't see it, but I'll take it. I think I'm hilarious, and that's all that matters.
So Des, I am not a good singer.
That's okay.
But I love to sing.
Yeah.
And I always ask singers that I interview to sing with me.
Okay.
Mercedes Benz.
Start, 2, 3, and...
Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz?
That's it.
I love that song.
Now, can you tell me what my key is?
I think that's A major. Da 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 da. I think that's A.
Okay. I always ask people this. No, you know, you apparently have perfect pitch.
I do. It is a blessing and it's a curse. And, you know, it's a muscle that gets stronger the more I use it. Yeah. So, like, this is something I used to flex on all the time. I'd, like, hear a car horn and I'm like, oh, that's like a C chord. When you teach, some people sing off key, and when you have perfect pitch, that can sometimes be something that's painful. So when I don't flex that muscle, it lets me relax a little bit on my students that are off key.
Studies suggest that musicians' brains are different from the rest of us.
I believe that.
And that they're better at understanding nonverbal communication,
yes.
Better at memory, learning abilities,
yes.
Attention to detail.
Yes.
And even planning and strategizing. Although I'm not sure about the last one based on the experience that I have with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
But what's your take? So you say yes?
I fully agree with that. You're not wrong. Most musicians are not great organizers. I am an organizer to a fault.
It's because you're female, too.
That's exactly what it is. But yeah, I fully agree with that.
Tell me where people can find your information. This way,
yes.
They can see everything.
Yes, you can follow us on all of our social media. That would be either my personal social media, where I post a lot more of my solo gigs. That's D Spinks, S-P-I-N-K-S, music, all one word. Or the band Instagram for Dez and the Swagmatics, which is just Dez Swagmatics. D-E-S, it sounds like a Z. It's short for Desiree, so it's an S. We also have an official website, www.dezandtheswagmatics, spell the whole thing, .com.
Pleasant. Are you related to Leon Spinks?
I am. Leon and Michael are my cousins.
Oh!
I've never met them. They are way too famous for that. And
yeah,
they're like
yeah.
Third cousins, I believe. But they are family.
Okay, Des, this is going to be the last question because I know you have to leave
okay.
And go to work.
I know.
So what was the most morally difficult decision you've ever had to make?
I guess we can talk about this because this person is in a better state of recovery, but it was whether or not to allow a former member of my band to continue playing in the band or to kind of force them to stop to get treatment, you know?
Mm.
It's really hard being a musician with any kind of substance abuse or alcohol problem because you play in bars.
Oh.
And when you do a good show, you know, rather than giving you tip money, most people want to buy you a drink, you know? And if you do a really good show, now people have bought you 4 or 5 or 6. It was to a place where he was falling down on stage. We couldn't get a hold of him. He was going through all kinds of legal troubles because of this problem. And it's like, we can either continue to keep helping him and keep bailing him out and keep giving him gigs and keep saving him, or we can let him have the space to get better.
Yeah.
And he's doing so much better.
Oh, that's
I'm
great.
So proud to like see him now and doing great. It's really lovely.
Well, it has been lovely talking with you, Des.
Thank you so much.
This time went so fast. I had so many more questions that we can't get to, but
I talk a lot, too.
That's great. That's great.
Thank you so much for having me. This was lovely.
I love the arts, and I love to talk, and that's why I'm talking to local artists. And if you like listening, then subscribe to my podcast. You can do it on this page, on iTunes, or anywhere you get podcasts. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey.